Where are we standing right now?
We are standing on the stage of Atlanta Symphony Hall, just about in the middle of the first violin session. So it looks pretty quiet and barren at the moment.
What's a brief history of this space?
This hall, this space where we're standing, which has hosted so many wonderful concerts and so many artistic events over the years, had its genesis in a tragedy in 1962, June 1962, I believe. About 120 members of the Atlanta arts community, patrons and sponsors, their families, their friends, were killed in a plane crash at Orly Field in Paris after a three-week cultural tour. The Atlanta Arts Association got together and had a vision that there would be a memorial. This group was in the vanguard of raising money to build this building, which became the Atlanta Memorial Arts Center, and then later was renamed the Robert W. Woodruff Arts Center because there was a huge so-called anonymous gift at the beginning that turned out to be from Robert Woodruff of Coca-Cola fame. I believe it opened in the fall of 1968, and by that time Robert Shaw had been engaged as music director of the Atlanta Symphony, and so he conducted the opening concert, and it was an all-French program to honor the victims of the crash, and also to thank the French government, which apparently had participated to some extent in the creation of this building.
So we've introduced this space where we're standing. Let's introduce you a bit more. How does your job as the director of choruses differ from that of the orchestra's music director?
Oh, quite a bit. I'm not quite as busy, for one thing. No, I'm very fortunate to be the sort of the low man on the totem pole of the conducting staff here, but I'm extremely fortunate to be the director of these marvelous choruses, the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra Chorus, the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra Chamber Chorus, which were founded by the legendary Robert Shaw. My job is to make sure that we maintain the health and vitality of the chorus, to challenge them to artistically improve themselves, to make sure they're ready for all the repertoire that they have to sing every year with any of a number of conductors, the two principal ones being Robert Spano, our music director, and Donald Runicles, our principal guest conductor. And every once in a while, I'm privileged to stand on the podium in front of them myself and conduct.
Right where we are right now.
Absolutely. And that's a great joy for me.
I hear that you come to conducting by way of the keyboard. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, that's very true, and that's not really that unusual. I know a lot of conductors who started as pianists. That's a skill that's very important to have as a conductor because you have to read lots of challenging scores, and if you start out as a pianist at least reading two staves of music, you're probably better off. And then I became an organist, and I was reading three all the time, so it was a natural leap to reading open score of 4, 5, 8, 10, 12 lines. Yeah, I grew up in Philadelphia. I went to the Philadelphia Musical Academy, then to the University of the Arts, spent a summer or two in Europe studying early music, came back, and by this time had conducted a number of choirs and accompanied a number of choirs in the Philadelphia area and was bitten by the conducting bug, so I ended up at Westminster Choir College for a master's degree. While I was at Westminster, Robert Shaw came every summer to do a two-week choral workshop. I was lucky enough to participate in a performance of the Benjamin Britten War Requiem the first summer I was there, conducted by Shaw in the Princeton University Chapel. And it was kind of a turning point musically for me. I just didn't know choral music like that could be made. it was just a religious experience in many ways for me. And I knew immediately, I met Shaw while I was there, was just so impressed with what he did with a group of singers who had never been together prior to that week, and how he was able to hone them into a precise and distinguished musical instrument. I wanted to be able to do that, and I wanted to do it by working with that man, if I possibly could. Well, make a long story a little shorter, that opportunity came for me faster than I thought it would, because as I finished that degree, I got a phone call from Charles Schisler, who was the dean of the college at the time, and he said, you know, there's a church in Atlanta that wants to talk to you about coming down to audition to become their music director, and what I have to tell you is that it's Robert and Caroline Shaw's church, Trinity Presbyterian.
Wow.
And I thought you might be interested in talking to them. I said, when do I go? Here I am. And one thing kind of led to another over the years.
At that time, you were sitting at the bench playing keyboard. Now you're standing on the podium. You're sometimes standing right where we are right now and conducting. What kind of preparation goes into conducting versus accompanying? How do you prepare that score?
If you take your job seriously, and you should, and I do, an enormous amount of preparation could go into either one. To be, I think, a great accompanist is to be a great facilitator. You have a certain kind of a job. That job is to, in the case of symphonic choral music, to recreate what the chorus is going to hear when they put things together with the orchestra in as helpful a way as you can.
You've explained your journey of how you came from the keyboard to the conducting podium. And let's go back to score preparation. How do you get ready to stand where we're standing right now and rehearse the chorus or conduct for a performance?
The biggest challenge, and also the most fun, is when you stand on the podium and conduct both the orchestra and the chorus, because then you are guaranteed of a cohesive vision of the piece. You control every element of the piece and every element of the interpretation. And of course, if anything goes wrong, it's totally your fault as well. And that requires an enormous amount of preparation and knowledge, thorough knowledge of every note of every instrument and every vocal part in the score. So the first thing I do is sit at a keyboard and either play or sing through every single line in the score. And if you're conducting something with a huge romantic orchestra that's very complex, that can take a long time. Then the next thing you want to do is analyze the score structurally, break it down into its component parts, and get inside the composer's head, if you will. And that's a very, very rewarding process when you're conducting a masterpiece by Beethoven or Brahms, because the structure is so intelligent and so well thought out. And so you mark it all up for structure. And that is also helpful to you when you come to conduct. And then sometimes I get my hands on as many recordings of a piece as are available to see how other people have done it. Whether I'm conducting eventually or whether Robert is conducting or whether Donald is conducting, I come hopefully to the very first rehearsal with my score fully edited, and I learned all of this in meticulous detail from Shaw, and with a clear idea of exactly how I want this process to go, about how long it's going to take, and what I want to hear at the end.
I feel like people don't fully understand that preparation process. Say you're conducting a masterwork. How many hours of preparation go before that first rehearsal?
If you're conducting the Beethoven Missa Solemnis, you want to start about 6 months out, minimum, and just kind of live with it as often as you possibly can.
So right now we're standing with all the seats behind us, and we're standing on the stage. So most people probably see your back, and they see your
arms.
Thank
goodness for that, yes.
So when they see your arms go out to the side and they see that gesture and then they hear the music. What is going on? What does that gesture tell the musicians?
A wonderful conductor, either for chorus or orchestra, and I've been privileged to work with so many fine conductors. When it gets down to the final rehearsals, the final preparation, everything is put together. You walk out, you stand on the podium, and what you want to do is get out of the way in some respects. Certainly, your gesture has to express exactly what you think the composer intends and what is helpful to the orchestra to see. And if there's a particular spot that is difficult for the timpanist, you want to give eye contact right at that spot. You want to be encouraging. You want to smile. You want to have good contact with the chorus. But in the final analysis, it's not about you in any way. It's about revealing a wonderful masterpiece that is going to communicate in a profound way to the listener. And hopefully, if you've done your job, you can then just guide that and be a traffic cop on occasion and give folks what they'll need to get to the end of the piece, but stay out of the way and let it unfold to the audience.